a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation. It was a rare and precious pearl, conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free. It was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. Now the reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switching bait, criticize and confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor, while the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand that pulls the string. It makes his little puppets dance to every song he sings. As the night folds in on a rising tide, look beyond the shadows, behold a pale horse ride. They claim to seek a new world order, nations without borders, but don't believe
the lie.
Even in this wealthy nation, it could come down to starvation in the twinkling of an eye.
In the twinkling of an eye. Yes, yes, yes. Resurrect the Republic, Dirty Uncle Sam. Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. I don't want to interrupt any further this epiphany that Judge Nally has had. So please, Judge, go ahead on.
Okay. When you send this letter, when you send your letter of criminal trespass warning to the sheriff, you will be putting him and all of his deputies on notice of a fact that their interference with your use of your property, i.e. your constitutionally guaranteed rights, without your consent, will subject them to civil and criminal penalties. Well, the nice thing about, one of the things you learn about in the law is this business of, one of the things is this business of sovereign immunity or qualified immunity. Mm. And for years and years and years, the courts just had a hard and fast rule, if he's a public officer, you can't sue him. Well, that has begun to modify because of the abuses, and the judges have figured out, well, you know, this could be an exception to that rule, and this could be an exception to that rule. And one of the things they've all settled on is the issue of malice. If a party can prove malice on the part of a public official, their immunity goes away. They don't have it anymore. Now they can be sued for civil damages. So once you put them on notice and they ignore the notice, now you have proven malice. And it's not going to hurt you a bit to go into a, even in a state court, in a tort action against a deputy who has interfered with your peaceful possession and use of your property rights, your intangible property rights. It's not going to make you mad at all to know that when you go in there, you can lay that, you can establish the value of just one of your civil liberties through 18 U.S.C. 3571, in which Congress established the value of one of your civil rights, just one of them, at $250,000. And that's if an individual violates one of your property, intangible property rights. If a corporation violates one of your intangible property rights, such as the sheriff's department, now the value goes up to $500,000. So I think you need to send your own criminal trespass warning. I'm not telling you what to do, and I'm not giving you legal advice. But if I had received, or if I may yet receive, one of these criminal trespass warnings, you can rest assured that that sheriff is going to get his own criminal trespass warning, and I will burn his eyeballs with it.
God bless you.
Well, that sounds like a fence, Dan.
I mean, this whole letter just screams authored by some idiot attorney who does not have the first concept of what property is in this state.
They're communists, Judge.
Or if he does, he's ignoring the facts of law. So, you know, open the sheriff's eyes and open whoever the lawyer was that wrote this piece of garbage and let them know. Oh, and mention that in your letter, too, that whoever authored this letter will be considered as a co-conspiratorial party. Now, let me shut up. I get carried away sometimes.
Well, I don't think you're getting carried away. I think exactly you're saying what people need to hear. And we have to fight back. What do you think, Carl?
Okay. Obviously, you know that that's exactly my approach, and we have to modify those approaches every time. Look, what we have right now, what we have laid bare is, number one, the county commission is definitely an illegally functioning entity, supposedly occupied by people that were elected. I can not only prove that they are in violation of the law, which caused the citizen's arrest to occur last night, I can also prove that they are incorporated in order to achieve that which, as elected, they cannot achieve. And we have the county commissioner of Henry County admitting as such in two separate public on-the-record meetings. So they have that going on. That's just the commission. Then we now have the police department. The police department has shown to be operating outside of the law, and that group is now basically rogue. We have the sheriff's department. The sheriff himself is operating in the same state of uncompliance or illegally operating by holding state funds as the county commissioners, in addition to the corporate involvement that his office is involved with that puts him in the same state. All of them are avoiding what I originally wanted to get before the grand jury, which was that the fire department is altering records for the purpose of insurance fraud. So we have the police, we have the fire, we have the sheriff, and we have the county commissioners, all in various states of illegal and unlawful operation. It is the Phantom of the Opera come to life. We do not have a government in Clayton County. We have a criminal cabal that has now decided through its council, because the people there, the sheriff, the police chief, the county commissioners, they are not smart enough to do any of this stuff on their own. They look to legal counsel. It is the legal counsel that must be dismantled and removed. And I will stay with Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8, and Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1. They are and remain esquires. That term remains a title of nobility. And by God, the Constitution says that they are precluded from holding any office of public profit or trust. Now, folks, Is that too difficult to understand? Is that too difficult to comprehend? Because what they are prevented from being there for is exactly what we're seeing happening.
Yes, that's exactly
right. All your thoughts on that.
That's exactly right. I would have this to say. When I look to how I govern myself, I, of course, go back to history, and history tells us, there was a man who said, I have but one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. Now, that experience led him to ask a question. The question was, is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. That's what I have to say. I think you're absolutely right, Carl.
Paul?
Yes, sir.
What are your thoughts on what I just said?
This whole matter needs to be brought into the light in a public forum, that is to say, through legal action, through in a court.
Yep.
But it also needs to be brought into light through the use of the press. And I find it regrettable that there was only one reporter there, wasn't there?
No, there was two. One from the Atlanta Urinal Constipation, and and the other from the Clayton Daily.
Well, and one more. I was there. Oh,
excuse me, Thomas.
I meant in addition to present company, of course.
Yes, sir. But yes, there were.
But I don't know if you know the story, and I really shouldn't go into this. I will try to make it as brief as possible.
You're under no obligation, Judge. You're under no obligation to be brief on my show. Please feel free to take the floor.
Well, I do humbly thank you.
Oh, thank you, sir.
The First Amendment to our federal constitution came about because our founding fathers were an educated group of men, and they kept abreast of the news that was current for their time, and the news that resonated from their immediate past. And in 1735, there was a printer up in New York whose name was Peter Zenger. And Mr. Zenger became severely displeased with the governor of New York and decided that he was going to tell the people what was going on, and he began printing in his newspaper all the transgressions. Well, needless to say, that did not set well with the local judge. Well, the next thing you know, poor Mr. Zenger is getting hauled into court, and he is accused with seditious libel. Now, the problem was, everything he was printing was the God's honest truth. But the result of the trial was, in spite of more than adequately competent counsel, the judge instructed the jury to retire and return with a verdict of guilty.
Ooh.
Well, the jury retired, and they came back, and they said, not guilty. The judge sent them back again with instructions on the verdict to return.
Wow.
And they dutifully left and came back and said, not guilty. Well, that made the judge mad, so he just throws everybody in jail, including the jurors. Well, he would let them out if they changed their verdict and paid a small penance. And a few of them took advantage of it. You got to understand, jails back in those days were dungeons, cold, damp, stinking. But nine of those jurors stayed put along with Peter Zenger.
Praise the Lord Jesus.
And his attorney appealed the entire matter to the High Court of Pleas in New York City. Well, lo and behold, thank the good Lord, there was a sufficient amount of publicity surrounding it that the Lord Chief Justice decided that the rule of common law just had absolutely had to prevail. So he ruled that the judge did not have the authority to punish the jurors for their verdict. So the consequence was that Peter Singer was released, and he just kept right on publishing his newspaper. But our founding fathers understood and learned the lesson. And from that came freedom of the press, truth as a defense, and the right of every man to speak freely. Responsibly, but freely.
You mean not in their safe space? I'm sorry, I had to throw that in there.
It should be noted, it should be added at this point, that history does in fact repeat itself. A judge here in Georgia just sentenced a man or ordered a man to quit sending or quit doing open records requests.
Yes.
And I don't know if he sentenced him yet or not, but here it is. They're doing the same thing right here, right now in Georgia.
Yep,
not surprising. I don't know how many people have at this point missed the 1957 Georgia Memorial to Congress, but I mean, you know, we've known about this gaining treason that has been incremental in its steps, kind of like a frog in the pot, I like to say, as an example. And, you know, we've come a long way since the days of Mayberry and Andy Griffith, I tell you that. When I stood there with you, Judge, and I saw the resolve in your eyes, I have to say, you know, for all of the shame that I feel for what I see in this corruption, sir, standing with you and Carl that day, I was proud to be an American. I want to thank you both.
Well, we were just thankful you were there.
Yes.
Anytime. Carl knows. I mean, this is exactly what we need to be doing. We need to be bringing this to the public's attention, and we need to keep hammering it. And, you know, as frustrated as I get sometimes, and I know you do too, and so does Carl and so does Lori, if we don't continue to exercise every last opportunity, then, you know, I fear that people won't waken in time. I have to put this on the plate of Almighty God to deal with. It's beyond my power, but I tell you.
Excuse me for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
We can't do that. We cannot sit back and wait. We must be about the business. Desperately
I'm with you, Judge.
The business of educating our children so they understand that right now the law, and I can't talk about other states because I don't know their law, but in Georgia, there is more ammunition in the law than you can imagine. And they need to understand that in order to protect their freedom, the ammunition is in the law initially. And the next most important thing they need to understand is just who they are and what they are once they are sworn as grand jurors.
Yes.
They need to understand we're independent. Once I take that oath and my hand goes down, that judge answers to me. The district attorney answers to me. The governor, the legislature, the judges of the Supreme Court of the state of Georgia, and yes, even the president and the Congress answer to me.
Yep.
Here in Georgia, little town, little community in Georgia. That's the kind of power these men and women have got, and they need to start exercising it.
That is precisely why, Paul, that is precisely why the tack of getting our criminal complaints before the grand jury has been my priority now for quite some time. And it is precisely why the DAs are scared to death to allow me there.
Now,
I concur with that.
Now you're putting your finger on exactly the problem. If we exercise responsible speech before a grand jury, Tracy knows, she knows just as sure as God made little green apples, that she's going to go to trial and she could go to prison. The sheriff and the police chief know that they could be going to trial and going to prison. And even the judges down there, now they've been quiet so far, but you can bet your bottom dollar they know what went on the other night, and they are cringing. Because all it's going to take is one of those grand jurors, present grand jurors, to find out and hear about what's going on and start asking questions and then say to his colleagues, you know, folks, we really ought to get Carl down here to explain to us what's going on, his side of the story. Mm-hmm. They do not want, the power structure does not want the grand jury to hear those words. That is the most fearful thing in their world.
So to that end, Paul, that is why I have been hammering the county commissioners and the sheriff of Henry County, not just Clayton, but Henry as well, to get me before the grand jury. It doesn't matter which one I get before, because any grand jury in the state can accomplish the same exact thing.
Yeah.
So
that's why they keep you from it, though, brother.
What Paul and I have been working on here is exhausting or trying every avenue of approach we can with these two counties in particular. And I want to make sure that I know all of the roadblocks that are going to be presented and have the rebuttal for each and every one of those roadblocks, so that when I go to one of these smaller counties and attempt to get before their grand jury, I may not suffer the same fate.
This is one of those times when it is a great detraction to us not to be able to afford the best legal counsel possible. And I say that because of this. If you or I, either one or both of us, wind up being charged with crimes that, of course, they can't prove, I am of the opinion that the first thing, the absolute first thing, would be to have an attorney file the necessary petitions in federal court to remove our cases from whatever state court, whatever state superior court we're in, to the federal judiciary, and do it before the local authorities have time to get our case before a local grand jury. And the reason I say that is because, unlike Georgia practice, now the law in Georgia is that you have the right to petition the grand jury, but the local authorities use various techniques to keep you from petitioning the grand jury.
Yep.
But in federal court, there is a statute, and I must apologize, I can't recall the citation off the top of my head. I can't seem to get a grip on that useless little tidbit of information. But anyway, there is a code section which commands the United States attorney to present your case to a grand jury, and you have a right to go to that grand jury. And the U.S. attorney doesn't have any discretion in that matter. Well, my God, can you imagine what would happen in Clayton County or in Fulton County or in Cobb County or Bartow County if word got out, oh, my God, Carl just got summoned into a federal grand jury. Well, everybody's going to know what's fixing to happen. The grand jury is going to hear and see the truth.
Yes, sir.
And that truth will set the whole dead blame state free.
Well,
so keep that in mind. You know, if they haul off and arrest you, you go ahead and demand a public defender. If you can't afford an attorney, you at least get a public defender. And then you set the public defender down and say, look, now here's what you're going to do. First thing you're going to do is transfer this case right now. Don't give them time to do any probable cause with a grand jury. Right now, you get this case transferred into federal district court. And yes, then we're going to go to the grand jury. You put it in writing to the United States attorney that I want my case heard by a federal grand jury, and I want to testify. Now, that's going to scare the living hell out of every crooked politician in this state.
Amen.
Do we need to wait for an arrest to occur for that to happen?
You probably will, because the United States Attorney's Office in Atlanta is not any better than the district attorney in Clayton County or Bartow County. I hate to say that. I know they've got a new interim, what's his name, Horn.
Yeah.
Is the United States attorney. But the problem is, even though Horn's new, and he might be a reputable individual, he is still surrounded by a lot of, quote, old hands, unquote, who understand politics as usual in Georgia. And believe me, that bunch, they're not going to do anything to disrupt the status quo if they can possibly prevent it.
Well,
they all have unclean hands, Paul.
Well, of course they do. I'd like to, and thank you, Lori, for this, U.S. v. Lee. No man in this country is so high that he is above the law. No officer of the law may set that law at defiance with impunity. All the officers of the government, from the highest to the lowest, are creatures of the law and are bound to obey it. It is the only supreme power in our system of government. And every man who, by accepting office, participates in its functions, is only the more strongly bound to submit to that supremacy and to observe the limitations in which it imposes on the exercise of the authority of which it gives. And that is U.S. v. Lee, Your Honor.
You know, that, there are times, there have been and there probably will continue to be times in my life when I find it of no comfort whatsoever that I have spent so much time reading case law, especially old case law.
Mm-hmm.
Because the words that those old judges could use to paint mental pictures were without a doubt. Now, it didn't do a darn thing for my waistline, but it sure did expand my brain.
It expanded something, Paul.
You've got to love a man with that kind of skill with the verbiage of our language. I mean, you just got to admire him. There's no other way to put it.
Surely so. Surely so.
And now, now that language is being perverted by the very profession that we are charged with defending our rights with, and that is the legal profession.
You're correct. And, you know, believe it or not, I've even had one attorney tell me. I mean, she just looked me right square in the face and she said, you know, when I went through law school, they didn't teach us any of what you're telling me about the grand jury.
No kidding.
And I listen to what you tell me and I go research it, and lo and behold, you're right. So,
well, here's a message for all attorneys right there. They should be, I mean, my brother is included. My mother had asked him when he was in law school if he would help pass out flyers to stand with the Second Amendment and stand against Governor Florio in New Jersey. And my brother's question to my mother was, well, do you want me to graduate law school? And and of course, he was correct in knowing that his professors were just, they were communists. They were just gun-grabbing, crazy communists. And that was Rutgers Law School, Camden, New Jersey. I just want to give you all a shout out there. I hope you'd blow some of your communists out of there. But we wonder why these lawyers keep coming out of law school and police officers think, well, they're lawyers. They know the law. Look, this is like the blind leading the blind. I swear to God. Oh, my Lord.
We know, for example, that the American Bar was an avowed communist organization up until they decided that they were going to change a word, and that word was communist, and they gravitated towards socialist, and then they knew that that was too close to communist, so they gravitated to progressive. But all three words are the American Bar.
Mm. I call them the regressives, though, because that's exactly what they are.
Mm.
They are regressing, and they're taking our society backwards. I mean, didn't we learn from Bolshevism that it doesn't work?
You know what's such a shame is that if people do read their history, then they will understand that that guy they call Leon Trotsky was, I can't remember his American name, but he was an American, and he was funded by the central bankers, given $100 million in gold, given $1 million in cash, a ship and 50 men, and he was sent over to Russia to foment the rebellion that we know as the Communist Revolution. So we exported communism to Russia.
May I share his name with the audience here for a second?
Yeah, what was it?
Leon Trotsky, Lev Davidovich Bronstein.
There you go.
Influenced by Vladimir Lenin, Karl Marx, and Friedrich Engels. You guys know where that's going. I mean,
So you see, the bankers at the time, with their legion of pirates known as attorneys, they had this plan worked out a long time. It's always been a global plan, and it's always been the bankers' plan to have their monetary system in place in every country in the world. And the likes of, Assad, the likes of, Saddam Hussein.
Don't forget Gaddafi.
Gaddafi. All of these people are against the World Bank. They're all against the global banking society. That's why we're at war with them. The same thing is the situation with Russia right now, who continues to adhere to its independence and continues to be on the radar, and that's why they're trying to foment another war with them.
Yeah. And as Mike said from the wings here, don't forget North Korea and Iran.
There you go.
You know, some of these countries, some may say, well, what are these guys saying, that we shouldn't have went in and bombed Gaddafi? He was a bad guy, or Saddam, because that's exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that it is not the responsibility, nor is it supported by the Constitution, that we get involved in the affairs of all of these other nations. It is none of our business what they do, as long as it doesn't threaten the shores and the people of the United States. And in closing on that matter right there, I believe our founders said, alliance with no one, trade with everyone.
There you go.
Now look, what we're looking at here, and this is us digressing, we're looking at now national and the global scheme of things, and we don't need to do that because there is not a single chance in hell that we individually or collectively with those that we can put together are going to make any difference at the national scene right now. Our only hope, our only remaining hope is at local.
I hear the judge saying something there. Go ahead, Judge.
Light bulb just went off.
Excuse me for interrupting, but since you seem to have an audience coast to coast, let me interject briefly an observation for the benefit of the national audience, and that is this. If you are unhappy, and I don't mean to get us off on another topic, so I just want to be brief with this, but if you're unhappy with the FBI and the U.S. Justice Department's decision in not prosecuting or not taking this matter of Hillary's emails to the courts, if you know one member of a federal grand jury, ask the grand juror to ask his colleagues whether or not they think they should do the inquiry. In other words, summon the FBI with all their documents into the presence of the grand jury and go through every single one. And then let the grand jury make the decision. A federal grand jury anywhere in the 50 states has the authority to inquire into that matter. Now, if they come back with a presentment, and they find that they need to indict and send it to trial, then they have the authority to do that. I don't care if they're sitting in Hawaii. But once that indictment is returned in open court in Hawaii, the judge must order the clerk to forward it back to the district court that has actual jurisdiction. Yeah. But every grand jury, any grand jury, federal grand jury in any district court has the authority to summon the FBI and their evidence and examine it themselves and make their own determination whether or not a prosecution should exist.
The reason why we're going here is because our real bridge between the violations of the First Amendment and the implementation of the Second is and can only be the grand jury.
Yes. That is the only interceding entity that can prevent our laying hands upon the Second Amendment.
Well, I'd have to say, you know, Judge, my father, who was a judge, God rest his soul, is no longer with us, but, you know, I think that he would really, really like you, sir. He'd probably have you all would talk for hours, but can you be my surrogate replacement dad? I mean, I swear to God, I love you with all my heart, sir.
Well, let me tell you this. One thing you need to understand, I do not ever give legal advice. However,
I understand.
Well, no. Try to see the humor in this. We all know that people who aren't in possession of a bar card are prohibited from giving legal advice.
Well, they would lead the public to believe that. I'd slightly disagree with that in principle, but that is what they are enforcing. Yes, sir.
That's right. They want to enforce that, and that they're doing that to protect their own, their income.
Sure.
So what I tell everybody is I don't practice law, and I don't give legal advice. However, I do reserve my right to speak upon any topic of conversation and express my opinion, no matter how ill-informed that opinion might be.
That's your God-given right, sir.
That's right. That's right.
Why? Now, if I would like to take that information and I would like to act upon it, that would be my own choice and decision, free of any consultation. I have no money has exchanged hands, and I not received any legal advice. Any decisions that Carl makes, I believe he would say so too, are free and on his own accord.
That's right.
Yeah, what is good is expressing your right to free speech if no one can listen to it and then therefore maybe use that information to go forward. See, the way they've concocted their little magic and their little spelling, it's amazing. It really is. It's almost like they're the Magi revisited.
Yeah. Well, you know, we the people must, you know, if we're looking for somebody to blame for this or to blame for that when it comes to the problems in our government, we really, as a matter of personal acknowledgement, have to go to the mirror, the nearest mirror in the house, and look in the mirror and say, why weren't you paying attention?
Yes, sir. And on that, Lori, I believe, has a few little quips you would like to add to this that I believe is relevant to Carl's situation. Lori, inform us a little bit of some of the stuff that you've been uncovering in Olmstead v. United States?
Olmstead v. United States, yes. Let me get to that. It says, crime is contagious. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for law and invites every man to become a law unto himself, and it invites anarchy. And anarchy, we can see today, is actually happening with the people who are claiming to be law enforcement. But also in Owen v. City of Independence, it says the innocent individual, and that would be Carl, who was served with this unlawful request today. The innocent individual who is harmed by an abuse of governmental authority is assured that he will be compensated for his injury. So I really do hope that these officers are listening. You need to understand that you are not exempt because of thinking that you have immunity. Shewer v. Rhodes says, when a state officer, yes, you heard that right, gentlemen, when a state officer acts under a state law in a manner volitive of the federal constitution, he comes into conflict with the superior authority of that constitution. He is in that case stripped of his official or representative character and is subjected in his person to the consequences of his individual conduct. The state has no power to impart to him any immunity from responsibility to the supreme authority of the United States. So I hope the deputies are listening, because you acted in individual capacity today.
Do you have the citation of the year of that case?
Yes, hold on 1 second. I will get you the year.
I tell you what, Judge, you might want to link up with Lori after this, because she's a wealth of information, sir.
Well, I'm really curious about that, because it's not a case I recall. And what is what's really got my attention is the judge in that case bringing out the concept of the superiority of the Constitution. And I don't know what year that case was decided. But
1974.
Yep.
1974.
And I've got two more for you that you'll enjoy. Schwer versus Board of Examiners. The practice of law cannot be licensed by any state. Sims v. Athrens. The practice of law is an occupation of common right.
Keep making this bad. Hey, Chief, I got another message for the Chief. Keep pissing people off, and you're going to only cause them to dig your own deeper hole.
So, I mean, you know, I can keep quoting if you all would really like.
Oh, please, come on, give us just a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
Okay, let's see. Another one that is a really good one when we're talking about the constitutional rights and the safeguards. Malloway v. Hogan, all rights and safeguards contained in the first 8 amendments to the federal constitution are equally applicable. And here we go. You're going to love this. because this is talking about the judicial immunity. In Mirelles, I hope I said that correct, M-I-R-E-L-E-S v. Waco, a judge is not immune for torturous acts committed in purely administrative, non-judicial capacity. However, even in a case involving a particular attorney not assigned to him, he may reach out into the hallway, having his deputy use excessive force to haul the attorney into the courtroom for chastisement or even incarceration. A superior court judge is broadly vested with general jurisdiction, provided the judge is not divested of all jurisdiction. He may have his actions excused as per the finding. Now, what that means is, as long as he is acting within his jurisdiction. So what we need to remember with Sarah V. Rhodes, by law, a judge is a state officer, and the judge, when he acts, then acts not as a judge, but as a private individual in his person. When a judge acts as a trespasser of the law, when a judge does not follow the law, the judge loses subject matter jurisdiction, and the judge's orders are not voidable, but they are void and of no legal force or effect.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Yes.
this is something that bears noting. We can quote the law till the cows come home.
That's right. True.
We can use every citation that is available to us in mm-hmm. our pleadings. But all of this is only going to resonate with a lawful judiciary.
Exactly.
Which we currently do not have.
Right. Because you can quote it until the cows come home, and even just like with the statutes that you had yesterday, you didn't even have to use constitutional. You used their own statutes against them. They knew Correct. They were violating them. And as long as you have no one who is going to enforce their statutes or the laws, whichever one, pick and choose at this point. They don't follow either one.
I'm with the judge in saying that we need, it's time, it's long past time that we began the enforcement.
Right.
And that's exactly why we come full circle to what was required last night in order to bring this to a successful conclusion. Mm-hmm. That's what we did not have. And that's what is going to continue to be requested of whomever says they are oath keepers mm-hmm. or believers in the rule of law. If you are either one of those and you sit on your hands, then you are as guilty as the perpetrators of this unlawful, unholy, legal, law, judicial, legislative, and executive takeover that has occurred.
Well, I have to tell
Carl,
I'm
sorry, Tom.
No, it's okay. When I went there, I specifically and intentionally wore an Oath Keepers shirt. Why I did that was a message to all Oath Keepers out there. These folks are who I've stood ground with and broken bread with, and many of whom I love dearly. I've got to say, when you have a retired judge and police chief and a man who has like Carl, who's brought so much of this corruption forward in documented fact and placed it there, and no one takes a stand, it makes you want to wonder as to exactly who's running things. Who's the leader of that three-ring circus if you can't get people out there who are standing for and with the people?
Tom, let me ask you something. Was the person you were with, was she doing any recording during the time that we were talking with that that person that I don't even know what to call him. I don't want to call him chief of police. That's giving him too much honor. But do you remember if she was recording any of that?
Carl?
Yes.
Absolutely.
There you go, Judge.
Oh man, can I possibly get a copy? I need a copy of that for evidence.
Judge, it's already in the works.
God bless you. You're a mind reader.
Well, I wasn't going to put it out there on the air, but I might as well. And you know, I don't have anything to hide from these people. The one thing that, you know, I have to lean to my faith for this. The one thing that the belief and in Jesus Christ has given me is absolutely no fear of tyrants. None.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there you go, Paul. Ask if you shall receive.
Yep.
And you know,
Chief, just in case you're listening, well, sir, you done goofed big time.
Yeah, it's on tape. I love it.
You and your bankster gangsters.
And yeah. Let's not forget the sheriff as well, because he is now.
Oh, goofed. I've only yet to start on that wart.
Mm-hmm.
That's a next step and probably a whole nother conversation, but. While we were there was one man who came forward and he was free to claim his authority. Mm-hmm. Respect my authority. And he didn't want to listen to anything that we had to say. He did not want to read the law of which was cited. That
well,
was
no,
broken.
Because if he had read it, then he would be complicit in it.
No, he's complicit. Yeah, but he's complicit in... Here's the thing. You can stick your fingers in your ears and you can cover your eyes all you'd like. If somebody comes to you and presents you with the information and you refuse, you've done the same thing as read it.
Oh, I agree.
And ignore it. So
actually,
but I'm just saying this probably the trick.
Oh, hold on. Carl, go ahead. Carl, go ahead.
Paul has the definitions pertaining to that. And it has to do with malice. Would you kindly explain that one?
Okay. The courts have held, and the federal courts especially have held, that, and I'll tie this in with a Georgia statute, that any time a public official admits to ignorance of the law, that equates to malice. Now, once you prove malice in a tort case against an elected public official or an employee, that alone takes away their immunity defense.
Yep.
And in Georgia, we have a statute which says that when they become effective, the laws of this state, the citizens of this state must take notice thereof. Ignorance of the law excuses no one. So let me, again, let me, to your national audience, ask them to go to their law books and see if they can find a similar statement in their statutes about ignorance excuses no one, or look in the court cases in their state. And if they find that, either in statute or in the common law, which is case law precedent, then they can use that if they ever need to bring a tort action against a public official or employee to counteract the immunity defense. And there's case law precedent. On that, so excuse me, go ahead, Lori.
I was just going to say, to add to that what you're saying, and I wanted to say Elrod v. Burns, it says the loss of the First Amendment freedoms, which is what they were attacking with Carl with this letter, for even minimal periods of time unquestionably constitutes irreparable injury. So right there, you use that case for the tort. As well as Miller v. U.S., there can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of his exercise of a constitutional right. And with that, I will be quiet and let y'all finish talking.
Oh, honey, you don't ever have to be quiet here.
No, but, you don't be quiet, that's for sure.
Yeah. If nothing else, I spoke to the friend that I came with, Judge Carl and Lori, if nothing else so far out of this journey that I've I've gone on exposing as much as I can in truth, I have had the blessing to have met some of the finest people I have ever could have met in my life. I am privileged and blessed. If I take my last breath tonight, I pass a blessed man for knowing all of you and several more. I just we're going to keep on at this, and all I urge is my audience, when you have a man like this judge standing up and you done pissed him off, folks, that's the time to start standing.
Absolutely, and we feel the same way about you as well, Tom.
Oh, well, I know.
God's blessed us tremendously.
I'm sure that somewhere in the vernacular of the English language, there's probably politer verbiage, but none that describes it so poignantly.
Yeah, well, I know that we get frustrated, but I think that, Judge, I think you have some good ideas for Carl, and I would love to have you back on just as often as you'd like. Anytime you want to address my audience, you have an open mic and an open home here with us. I think you do.
Oh, hold on a second now. I've got to keep him busy because we have a lot of work to do.
Well, yes, and I got a lot of work exposing the work that you have to do. So,
because I've got two more AO-91s that I've got to draft here sometime. And then, I don't need to be in any rush now that I know that you have that video evidence, so I can kind of lay back just a little bit and not get in a hurry doing these things until that video gets here. And once that's here, then it's going to be Katie bar the door.
Yes, sir. Well, okay. You know, our enemies are, they are the corrupt, criminal, bankster, gangster-led fools, and they're going down such a road. I mean, it's insane to think that you could continue to reuse the same principles and the same ideology that saw the Soviet Union collapse. And that is exactly what they are implementing in this country right now.
Sure they are. Sure they are.
Well, to that end, we have no choice but to continue the fight in every way that we can. If we do not, our progeny will most definitely suffer, and I will not stand for that.
Yes, sir. Neither will I.
I can't either. Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, it's a fine mess we find them in, and it's a fine battle we find ourselves in. But Paul, Thomas, Lori, you all know that with God's help and knowing that we are doing His will and doing the right thing, we cannot fail. We may stumble, but we cannot fail.
We cannot afford to fail.
No, we can't.
So that video that you've got is going to be something that I have to get a hold of myself so I can piggyback that onto the YouTube video that I have out there concerning last night's efforts.
Yeah. Well, on that note, folks, I will make sure you get it, Carl, as soon as I can get it to you.
Thank you,
folks,
sir.
We have run out of time for Resurrect the Republic, Dirty Uncle Sam.
God bless you and good night.
God bless you all. And we
Thanks,
will
guys.
Be back again. We will be back again with the judge and with Carl and with Lori. God bless all of you tonight. Give me liberty or give me death.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.